Reading this evening from Canto 1, Chapter 10, continuing where we left off from this morning. We'll be reading texts 14 through 19. Chapter 10 is Krishna's departure for Dwarka. The theme is viraha bhav, a mood of separation, which is a very elevated spiritual subject. But here it is, right here in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. There's meeting with Krishna that comes the next chapter when Krishna returns to Dwarka. But here, the associates of Krishna in Hastinapur are feeling great transcendental emotion and Krishna is stirring it by his actions, by his transcendental exchanges with them. It's quite a lineup of personalities too. One of the verses we read this morning, Subhadra, Draupadi, Kunti, Uttara, Gandhari, Dhritarashtra, Yuyutsu, Kripacharya, Nakula Sahadev, Bhima, not mentioned are Arjuna and Yudhisthira, Daumya, and Satyavati. The verse says they all nearly fainted because it was impossible for them to bear separation from Lord Krishna. And Prabhupada was explaining how can we understand the feelings of these exalted pure devotees? So he went to even materialists, what they're commonly attached to, but how they can let go. Mukta dusango, their attachment, duksanga, is released by hearing about Krishna. And that possibility comes by association with great devotees of the Lord. Even their attachments, which they have no hope of getting released from, gets released. Then the liberated souls, the self-realized souls that have no material attachment, they also become attracted to Krishna. What to speak of the pure devotees? What to speak of these eternal associates of Krishna? Krishna is leaving. How can we understand? They nearly fainted. Great, great feelings of separation. Their hearts were melting for him on the pot of attraction. They looked at him without blinking their eyes, and they moved hither and thither in perplexity. They didn't know what to do with themselves. Like, stop. One of the descriptions when Krishna left Vrindavan is the gopis abandoned their shyness. They were not disclosing previously what their true affection for Krishna was. But when Krishna was leaving, they abandoned that shyness and grabbed the horses and put themselves in front of the wheels of the chariot and anything to get Krishna to not go. Chastised Agura, stop. You can't do this. So that's where we're reading from. Starting with text 14. The female relatives, whose eyes were flooded with tears out of anxiety for Krishna, came out of the palace. They could not stop their tears, except with great difficulty. They feared that tears would cause misfortune at the time of departure. Prabhupada explains the palace becomes plural, so there's the royal quarters, the quarters for the, because these are all relatives, these are all wives of royal family members or daughters-in-law. And these are persons who had lost their husbands because, like, you know, the wives of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Or the wives of the sons of those sons of Dhritarashtra. So, wives and daughters-in-law. They were crying out of feelings of separation, and they felt this may be inauspicious for Krishna, so they tried to stop their tears, but they couldn't. So then they were wiping the tears, and as Prabhupada said, smeared their tears in their eyes, and their hearts throbbed. So they had, the Prabhupada's point is, they had reason to be inimical to Krishna, but they weren't inimical to Krishna. Nor had they ever before even seen Krishna, but they had heard about Krishna. They had heard about his form, they had heard about his powerful quality and his activities and his loving exchanges with others, and they became attracted to Krishna or attached to Krishna, so much so that when he's leaving, although they had no direct contact with him previously, they were completely given over to him. So he draws the conclusion, whether one associates with Krishna directly or indirectly, like Rukmini had never seen Krishna. She had heard about Krishna. And, of course, she's an eternal associate of Krishna also, but she gave herself completely to Krishna without having ever seen him. Being opposed by her brother. So, the message Prabhupada wants us to hear and receive is that just by hearing about Krishna, one becomes attached to Krishna. And this is so because of the transcendental potency of the topics of Krishna. The transcendental potency of the topics of Krishna is as potent as Krishna. Our intimate relation with Krishna can be confidentially revived by our talking of him, hearing of him, or remembering him. And that was the case of these female relatives. The next verse is the musical instruments. There's no purport, but this kind of drum, that kind of drum, this kind of flute, this kind of veena, different musical instruments. Just the cacophony of very beautiful sound vibrations in honor of Krishna's departure. Then the next verse, another separation mood, is those same royal ladies that had exited the palace and were moving hither and thither and didn't know what to do, they went up to the rooftops of the palace. And smiling with affection and shyness, they showered flowers upon Krishna. So the whole purport is dedicated to shyness for a woman. Prabhupada has very complimentary things to say about shyness. One phrase he uses is the particular extra natural beauty of women. So there's natural beauty and there's extra natural beauty. It's not what they're, he explains what he means by that later. So it's not just their physical appearance was beautiful, but beyond their physical appearance, their quality was a particular extra natural beauty. And it commands respect from men. Little cultural point, Prabhupada argues against. There are some historians that say this idea of separation of men and women came because of the strictness of the Mohammedans, that during the Mohammedan rule they established this, but Prabhupada dismisses that, saying, how is that so? Here's 5,000 years ago where strict parda, parda, he introduces this term, restricting association of men and women was by the higher class of people observed. So instead of it, Krishna's down in the common, courtyard, and he, getting ready to get on his chariot. The ladies understand Krishna's going to leave. They come running to see, and then they feel shyness, that shyness moves them up to the rooftops. He doesn't give the detail here, but elsewhere Prabhupada has described during his household days, he was at some business meeting, and it was in some man's office, and several business people all dressed up in their suits and so forth. And when they finished their meeting, they had stood up from the table and they were standing by the door having conversation. And there was a cleaning lady who had come. It was time for her to do her duties cleaning, so she had her bucket and her scrubbing utensils, and she silently stood by the door. And the men were just talking, and when one of them noticed, he stepped aside, and Prabhupada's point is all the big men stepped aside so this cleaning lady could come through. And he said, I noted, just see the powerful, that the power of shyness. Now, if she had exhibited something other than shyness, they might not have just parted so freely. But without saying a word, she moved these powerful men just by her shyness. So he's referring to that here, that it commands the respect. From all. So what's the point of a woman's shyness? It's to assist both the woman and the man, that means society in general, to become civilized. Human civilization, as conceived by the sages of India, is to help one free himself from the clutches of illusion. That's really what civilization is for. Going beyond the clutches of illusion, the bodily conception of life and the attraction for this body, that body. And so there are certain observances. Western culture doesn't like that. It's blend it, merge it, make it one. But the separation idea has a purpose. Going beyond the clutches of illusion. So the clutches of illusion is one is attracted by physical form. And recognizing that that's a form of material bondage, there's separation. And then transcendental knowledge says, really the attraction is not for the form, but it's for the spark within the form. There's another subject that Prabhupada would like to speak about. If the soul leaves the body, who goes to embrace a dead body? Yuck. But, so the attraction is actually for the soul. It's the spirit spark that is beautiful. And because the soul's beauty, because of the soul's beauty, one is attracted by the beauty of the outward body. The Vedic wisdom therefore forbids us to be attracted by false beauty. And because we are now in the darkness of ignorance, the Vedic civilization allows very restricted mixing of men and women. They say that the woman is considered to be the fire and the man is considered to be the butter. The butter must melt in association with fire, and therefore they may be brought together only when it is necessary. And shyness is a check to the unrestricted mixing. It is nature's gift, and it must be utilized. Nice. Very transcendental way of handling a contemporary delicate subject. Two more verses here that have very little purport. So, Krishna, there's the immediate relatives, the ladies who are related, the sounds of the musicians, trumpets and flutes and veenas and drums of different kind. Arjuna, who is this powerful, great warrior and conqueror of sleep, who is the intimate friend of the most beloved Supreme Lord, took up an umbrella. A white umbrella is a symbol of nobility, which had a handle of jewels and was embroidered with lace and pearls. Quite an opulent umbrella. Don't get them at Walmart. And that's what Prabhupada says. By so-called development of industrial enterprises, they are now using pots of gutta percha. Gutta percha is what? Like clay? Chinaware. Instead of metals like gold, silver, brass, and copper, they're using margarine instead of purified butter, and 1/4 of the city population has no shelter. End of purport. So, Vedic times were very opulent, as the beginning of the chapter also described. Uddhava and Satyaki began to fan the Lord with decorated fans, and the Lord, as the master of Madhu, seated on scattered flowers, commanded them along the road. So the chariot is now moving. It was being heard here and there that the benedictions being paid to Krishna were neither befitting nor unbefitting, because they were all for the Absolute, who was now playing the part of a human being. These enigmatic expressions Prabhupada liked. expanding upon, so he does here. He explains that they were glorifying him as if he was their leader or their relative or the king or the royal personality. So it was fitting. Then he says, but they were unfitting because the Lord is absolute and has nothing to do with any kind of material relatives. He is nirguna. And that means there's no material qualities in him. So this phrase nirguna and saguna are also confusing to the philosopher. They like the nirguna idea better than the saguna idea. So as a devotee, we can argue the Lord is nirguna. We can also argue he's saguna. He's nirguna in the sense that he has no material qualities. And he's saguna in the sense that he has transcendental qualities. So there's this, is nirguna worship or saguna worship better? Same idea is asked in Bhagavad Gita. My dear Krishna, can you tell me which is best? Worship of your personal feature or worship of your impersonal feature? Saguna worship or nirguna worship? But even the nirguna worship, it's worship of Krishna because he has no material qualities. But he's full of transcendental qualities. So, in the transcendental world, there's nothing contradictory. Whereas, in the relative world, everything has its opposite. In the relative world, white is the opposite conception of black. But in the transcendental world, there's no distinction between white and black. I mean, that's pretty extreme. Therefore, the sounds of benedictions uttered by the learned brahmanas here and there appear to be contradictory in relation with the absolute person. So they're describing him, in his glories as if he's one of them, and he's just a great one. But it's not appropriate. He's absolute. But at the same time, when they're applied to the absolute person, they lose all contradiction and become transcendental. So he gives an example. He gives other examples at other times. One example is, in this world, stealing is bad. But when Krishna steals, he gets a special name for it. And is worshipped for the butter thief. Bakanchor. But if we did some stealing, it's punishable. It's bad. Or as a great hero, he ran from the battle, apparently. And left to have Kaliyavana chase him into the cave where Muchukunda was. And Kaliyavana got cindered. Then he went back to the battleground and with Balaram he ran from Jarasandha, apparently. So he's got a name for, it's a coward, you coward. But it wasn't cowardice, it was a transcendental lila. And his stealing is a transcendental lila. And anything that appears to be contradictory is resolved by the very nature of Krishna being absolute. When Krishna protects the devotee and kills the demon, they're both delivered. although it looks like, oh, punishment and partiality to the devotee. And Prabhupada explains, they died on the battlefield seeing Krishna, in Krishna's presence, seeing Krishna. I mean, imagine if that happened to us. Our goal, die in Krishna's presence. We're seeing him. What's the result? Prabhupada's comment, no question. They were relieved of their sinful reactions and returned to their spiritual position. Although it looked like something bad, it was something good. Because Krishna is all good. So contradictions are resolved in the Absolute. Since he is the Absolute Personality of God, and everything is applicable to him, and still, in spite of all contradictions, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's like, even in the feelings of separation, it's another one of these contradictions, but feeling separation, then love intensifies. And when there's meeting, then it's not the same intensity as the feeling of separation, and except in the transcendental realm, even when in Krishna's association, there's the anticipation, very soon separation will come. So it intensifies the meeting. Soon separation will come. So separation is a very important part of transcendental affection. And it increases one's affection, the intensity of loving feeling. There's a description in Brihat Bhagavatamrita that this is like verse after verse after verse describing the intensity of affection that the residents of Vrindavan had for Krishna. When Krishna would be walking through the forest, there were trees. And when the cowherd boys for a moment could not see Krishna because he was on the other side of the tree, the vision of Krishna was obstructed by the tree, they would feel great anxiety until Krishna appeared on the other side of the tree. Or the cows, when it was time at the end of the day for the cows to go to the goshal to get milked, they didn't want to go to the goshal to get milk. They just wanted to be with Krishna. And so they would moo and moo. And Krishna would have to coax them. Go to the goshal. Milking time. And there would be an anxiety all night long, looking forward to again meeting with Krishna when it was time to go to the pasturing ground the next day. So it's not just the gopis were feeling separation for Krishna. All the residents of Vrindavan feel intense affection. Most intense affection. And with that affection, there were times when there was separation from Krishna. Just because his pastimes were orchestrated that way. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it says that the pastime of Krishna's departure from Vrindavan to Mathura is so painful that the devotees don't even like to describe it. And then he goes on to describe it. And he said that if worldly people hear this description, they'll think, oh, this is terrible. I want nothing to do with this. Look at all this suffering. Because they don't understand the nature of that pain, which certainly looks like pain, is an intense feeling of ecstasy. But it looked like pain. So they don't like. So we don't often hear. Like, we don't hear about so much about Krishna's departure from this world. Devotees don't like to talk about it. Oh, you know, well, how did it happen? So there's some information. Because there's transcendental pain associated with the separation from Krishna. At the same time, here we are. Canto 1, Chapter 10, separation from Krishna, being felt by, and it, the various ways in which that separation was being exhibited, those feelings, exchange of feelings, is the topic is being churned. The implication is that as we're hearing of these topics of the emotions of the residents of Hastinapur being moved by separation from Krishna, it starts to, with spiritual potency, churn our own sense of attraction for Krishna. We're just setting ourselves up for some pain of separation, because we become attracted to Krishna. And detachment from the pain of material existence. We heard this morning that a theme that's surfacing again and again in this section is just that the Srimad Bhagavatam itself is not different than Krishna. And so by regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, it's giving to even worldly persons the opportunity to get Krishna's association. Although it's just a story. If from a material point of view, it's just a story. And there's so many stories. Libraries filled with storybooks. But this description of Krishna's pastimes awakens something that the other stories don't. It takes us beyond the conception of duality. Into the realm of Krishna. It was real. I've been sharing this experience with this Penn State students, and I'll just say it again. It's still ringing in my ears that two of the persons who had never had any contact with devotees. In fact, when they came to be with us in Gitanagari, they didn't even know what it was. Just there was a yoga retreat. And at the end, two of them said, "I feel so safe. I feel like I've found this spiritual space within myself, and even if I get lost again, I can go and find that spiritual space again and feel, you know, free from my own anger and my own stuff." So nice. So nice. Just completely new people. The process of approaching Krishna is very powerful. Very, very powerful. We're very fortunate to have it in such a pure and in a regular fashion. A long way to go, but it's very powerful. So any discussion on these ideas? Yes.
Are feelings of separation felt only toward Krishna or also found with devotees of other incarnations of Godhead? Is it only found in like the Mahurya realm of Vajrabhakti? Is it also found in
Vaikuntha, where Acharya Prabhu is? It's a transcendental reality. It's even found, you know, in its reflected form here. So it's a transcendental reality that's felt. It's manifested differently. I can't think of examples because I don't know of scriptural examples of in Vaikuntha realm, but the principle makes sense. It's everywhere. It's just, it's transcendental reality. So it's, and it's not only Madhurya. The examples I gave are, you know, in all the rasas. Where there's attachment for something, the absence of that something, or even the apparent absence of that something, leads to feelings of separation. Even Krishna feels feelings of separation. When the cowherd boys entered into the mouth of Agasura, Krishna was feeling, he was feeling two things, both separation from the cowherd boys, and but the greater part was, he knew that they cannot live without him for a moment. So that was causing him great distress. So much distress that he became bewildered by his own yogamaya potency. And again in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when Krishna assembles the queens of Dwaraka to describe to them what his real feelings for the residents of Vrindavan are, like gives them a Vrindavan rasa lesson. And he's describing that as their feelings of separation for him are so intense, he's moved by that same intense feeling. And then he describes to Balaram why he doesn't go back. It's very curious. He wants to go back. And he knows they want nothing but that he returns. But he said the only thing that's maintaining their life is the hope that he'll return. And so if he returns, he can't stay in Vrindavan because there's all of his associates in Dwaraka. This is the explanation that's given. And so then they'll be feeling separation from him. So he'll have to leave. And if he leaves again, they won't be able to maintain their life. So he can't go back. Although there's nothing he wants but to go back. Even when he's in Dwaraka, he wants to be in Vrindavan. He's feeling separation. Transcendental. So it's a seeming, at the point of this last verse, it's a seeming opposite with meeting. It's opposite, separation. But in the absolute, it's all absolute. It's a variety of ecstasy. meeting, ecstasy, and separation, ecstasy.
I was thinking about this point which you said about in the absolute, everything, particularly in Krishna, everything is absolute. So
contradictions become resolved.
Yeah. So basically, everything that he does is for the good of, for the benefit of the person.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the absolute nature.
Well, that's one of the features of his absoluteness. It may look like inimical, but it's not. It's for the good of the individual. But anything, it's because he's absolute, anything that he does is absolute, although it may appear like something relative. It's nice understanding. Telling Maharaj Yudhisthira, tell a lie. It's all good absolute, it's not just good, it's all good absolute, whatever he does. We can't say that about ourselves or anyone else, our worldly personality. It's a very nice conception. Conception of the absolute.
I couldn't understand this, the broader meaning of this. Black is the same as white.
He doesn't drill down on it. He goes right on to the next thing. You want to hear it again? It's like saguna nirguna. It's like that, black, white. In the transcendental world, there's nothing contradictory. Whereas in the relative world, everything has its opposite. So there's the key. This implies that. But in the absolute, this is absolute and that is absolute. Although it may look like Lalita is saying something insulting to Krishna. That's not nice. Why are you speaking like that? Krishna. It's nice. Because in the absolute, there's no opposites. It's all transcendental. So, example. In the relative world, there is the opposite conception of black. In the relative world, white is the opposite conception of black. But in the transcendental world, there's no distinction. Between black and white. Therefore, the sounds of benedictions. How can brahmanas give benedictions to Krishna? That's contradictory. But it's appropriate. Black and white. Appropriate, inappropriate. Which is it? It's appropriate. It's inappropriate. It's appropriate. It's all absolute. He gives both sides, you know. It's because he's the relative of the Pandavas and the associates, then the glorifications are appropriate. But because he's the absolute, it's not appropriate. You always glorify the absolute. But, you know, to glorify him as a king or a great warrior, he's none of those things because he's Nirguna. It's not appropriate. But it's appropriate. when it's of this absolute nature, absolute realm. Black, white. That's the idea. Opposites. Yes.
You explained that Krishna felt separation. I'm a little confused about that. Since he is absolute, he's
absolute.
How can he feel separation?
Well, let me turn it around and say, how could he not feel if he's absolute? There's something he can't do, right? He's absolute. And there's something he can't do. Well, if he's absolute, it's certainly something he can do. It's a transcendental emotion. It's a transcendental emotion. Where do we get a sense of separation from? From Krishna. But what is Krishna's sense of separation? It's transcendental.
It cannot be compared to what I feel.
That's right. It's the other way around. What we feel is compared in a perverted reflection of what he feels. Not the other way around. He doesn't feel separation like we feel. He feels transcendental separation. And we feel the other kind, worldly.
In the past I read in Bhagavatam something about the last part when Krishna disappears from the world.
Okay.
Somewhere it said that Krishna left a body to confuse demons or something like that.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit more on that?
Well, I can just give a little more detail. Krishna is fulfilling the desires of everyone. So part of everyone is the materialists. So to fulfill the desires of the materialists, when Krishna left the world, the scene was, he was shot by an arrow that hit his heel. As Prabhupada explains, who dies from, you may have a foot problem, but you don't have lose your life problem by being shot by an arrow in your foot. But Krishna was shot by an arrow in his foot, and he died. He didn't die, because Krishna doesn't die. His appearance is transcendental, his disappearance is transcendental, and his activities are transcendental. So he died. But he didn't die. But he left behind a body that looked just like his body, so that the worldly people think, oh, he had a body like ours, and he died.
I read the corresponding part in Mahabharata.
Yes, so Prabhupada, it's not in the Bhagavatam, it's referred to in the purports from the Mahabharata. And there's different versions of Mahabharata, by the way. Okay, you want more on that, or that's okay?
The Mahabharata, which I read, it didn't say anything about leaving a body or anything like that. He disappeared from view. He ascended to heaven and disappeared from
you. Yeah. So there's some versions of Mahabharata that describe the Pandavas had to see hell. Right? You've heard of that?
No.
After the, you know, before they ascended into heaven, they had to see hell because of different reasons. There's some versions of Mahabharata described like that. In the Bhagavatam, it describes that they return to the spiritual realm in their self-same body. They didn't go have to go see hell. According to Bhagavad Gita, which is in Mahabharata, if one in this human form of life even engages in this tiny alpa dharma, slightest form of dharma, they're saved from that terrible experience of coming before Yamaraj and having to experience hellish existence. So, how? There are different versions of Mahabharata. Be careful. And then understanding them, when there's narrations on the same activity, and there's contradictions in those narrations of those activities, the higher authority is the authority that we accept. The higher authority amongst the Itihasas and Puranas is Srimad Bhagavatam. So the version of Srimad Bhagavatam is the final authority that we accept. And then why are those other descriptions there if they're bona fide renderings of the Puranas or Itihasas? It's to help persons understand something, a point. Don't rest upon your virtue, you should be concerned that if you perform sinful activity, you're responsible for that. You'll have to suffer for that, which is true. The other is also true, that if one becomes situated in devotional service to Krishna, you're relieved of the reactions of those activities. Even very bad ones. Something else? Yes?
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says there are no hard and fast rules and regulations for chanting the holy name of the Lord. And so, does that mean that if somebody just keeps on chanting and he does not take up to the initiation and those things, so will he be able to go back to Godhead only on that strength? Or?
There's a very nice discussion about this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, like a 12-page purport. Where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is establishing that Krishna is absolute. Just like we're discussing here. Krishna is absolute. And likewise, his holy name is absolute. And because his holy name is absolute and fully independent, the holy name alone is sufficient. One does not require that he gives lists of this and that. Purascharya vidhi, like, you know, before you do a Karmakanda ritual, there's things you need to do before to prepare yourself for purification purposes to take up that ritual and to get the full benefit of it. So Krishna is independent and absolute. So the holy name alone is independent. He even says, even of Diksha. Then there's a long purport because one might get a different idea than is intended. So Prabhupada is largely quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur explaining, and the essence of it, take 12 pages into 3 minutes, and it's, if one is on the platform of Shukadeva Goswami, which we aren't, Shukadeva Goswami didn't undergo initiation. He just heard Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, Vyasadeva, and phew, off he went. But for the rest of us that aren't Shukadeva Goswamis, we require initiation because there's a very significant event that takes place, an acceptance by disciplic succession and an impression, sangskara, that's made, that both of which we need to help us get the full benefit of what the independent holy name has to offer. So, step back from that particular topic of initiation. It's just, there's instructions. Instructions given by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Instructions given by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita say that we have to take shelter. Tadyati pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. It doesn't specifically use the word diksha, but it's take shelter of. Submit. Render service unto. And then when those instructions come, one of those instructions is there's this process of diksha. It's part of the instructions.
And when one goes back to the spiritual world, does he go directly to Golokunda or he goes...
Prabhupada said that before we go to Goloka Vrindavan, we enter into Krishna's roadshow. That's how he put it. That Krishna performs his Bhoma Lila. So one enters into the Bhoma Lila of Krishna, and by the Nitya Siddha devotees, one is trained the Kripa Siddha or Sadhana Siddha devotees become trained by the Kripa Siddha devotees how to serve Krishna on his roadshow. And then Goloka Vrindavan. But hey, take it, I'll take it. Krishna's association, Krishna's direct service. And they're non-different.
And as a devotee, should we think of going back to Godhead or just remain in service of Krishna and Guru and devotees? What should
in our stage, we should desire to be with Krishna. Desire to give up this place and be with Krishna. And in more advanced stage, whatever Krishna wants. In our stage, desire to be with Krishna. Prabhupada described that in one lecture. It's printed in the Back to Godhead magazine. It's nice understanding. It's common sense too. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's this quest for Gopakumar to meet Madan Gopal. And when he meets Madan Gopal in Vrindavan, in Goloka Vrindavan, he finds that he is then sent by Gopakumar, by Madan Gopal again. He finds himself in this realm. But as he's narrating, he said, "I've been back and forth so many times, I can't even tell where I am anymore, because literally it's not different. Literally it's not different, but apparent difference. There are some differences that allow one to. There's demons here, and there's no demons there, for example. But even he said, this everything looks the same." Now, what that doesn't mean is, every tree is an exact same place or that kind of thing. There was, Giriraj Maharaj was describing that when he was the president in Juhu and he was going back and forth between Juhu and Vrindavan to give Prabhupada reports about what was going on in Bombay, in Juhu. He met a very, very old man, an old sadhu there. The sadhu was describing things have changed so much here in Vrindavan. You know, when we go, we see things have changed so much in Vrindavan. Things have changed so much. But he described, when he was a young boy, you could walk from Vrindavan town all the way to Govardhan Hill and not see the light of the sun because there are so many trees. And now you can hardly see some trees because the desert has encroached from Rajasthan into Vrindavan. So what it looked like when Krishna was present is not what we see today, because, you know, the terrain, the geology and everything have somewhat changed. But the transcendental realm is the same. I mean, even that's an amazing statement, because just to go from Krishna Balaram Mandir to Govardhan Hill by car, it takes like 45 minutes. So how long a walk, and you don't even see the light of the sun? Amazing. Very thick forest. That was just, you know, whatever it was, early 1900s or something, the first half of the 1900s. Anything?
Maharaj, we say Krishna likes us more when we please his devotees. And I mean, looking at the hierarchy, we say we have to please Guru, then he will take that connection back to Balaram, and then he will recommend to Radharani, and then she will recommend to Krishna.
And there may be some stops in between too.
Yeah. And again, Krishna likes those who serve the devotee. And but sometimes we, due to our conditioning, we do not consider to be very truthful, we do not consider devotees around us really pure devotees, because of which we cannot serve them wholeheartedly or very nicely, not all of them. So in that way, we are pleasing some devotees and not pleasing others. So will that be considered as an...
What's your question? That's my question.
The question is, then we are pleasing some devotees and
not... I got the statement. Now, what's the question?
The question is then...
Is that pleasing to Krishna?
Yeah.
That's your question?
Yeah, is that pleasing to Krishna? Is it that, okay, out of 10, I'm able to...
What do you think? The very nature of your question is, I think you know the answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
So why are you asking the question?
No, I think he is not pleased.
Ah.
But again, we have our own limitations, right?
Okay.
So is it that we are...
But Krishna is ready to take our limitations away. Are you ready to have them taken away? Anything, then that gets... It's Vaishnava etiquette, just like in this section where Krishna is getting ready to leave. Queen Kunti prayed for Krishna to stay. Krishna just smiled. He got on his chariot. Like, see you later, Kunti. Yudhisthira came, and he pleaded with Krishna to stay. And Krishna stayed for 3 months. Yet when it was time for Krishna to go, Krishna came and placed his head at the feet of Maharaj Yudhisthira. And Maharaj Yudhisthira picked Krishna up and embraced him. as was appropriate for that distinction of he was the king and the elder. But those of similar age, Arjun and Bhima, they simply embraced. And Nakula and Sahadev came and placed their head at Krishna's feet. So the point is, we recognize some distinctions. Well, respect is the essence. It's offered in appropriate ways. So we're being encouraged to become Madhyama Adhikaris and leave behind the Kanishtha platform. And eventually, when or when will that day come, we'll become Uttama Adhikaris, but at least Madhyama Adhikaris. So in the Madhyama Adhikari status, we're encouraged to recognize those devotees that are more advanced, those devotees that are peers, those devotees that are less advanced. And there's respectful behavior towards each of them. Never, I don't want to serve them, but respectful behavior appropriate for their position. So we can have social etiquette. So Krishna showed by example, and we should follow the example and serve the devotees in an appropriate way. And Krishna likes that. Now, how we may serve a devotee has so many possibilities. The serving of a devotee is supposing somebody, you know, it sometimes happens that devotees do something wrong. But supposing somebody does something wrong, now how do we serve that devotee? We should serve the devotee. If they've done something wrong, they should serve them. It may be that we say something. Maybe we don't say anything, because it may not be our position of service to speak.
So if somebody is senior, we should not speak.
It doesn't say that. It's not just that. It's there's a way to speak to someone who's senior. Our Narahari Sarkar, great associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wrote a book on etiquette and dealings with the devotees. Very simple points. But was it in this question of someone that's more advanced? One may not say anything. One may say something, but it's said in a certain mood, in a certain manner of expression. With respect. And if it's not effective, he again says what the next etiquette is. You maintain respect and say again with respect. And you continue until it may become clear that person is, then you just continue chanting the holy name and pray for their welfare from a distance as a service. So they're appropriate, without detailing, there's appropriate behaviors of service for all types of devotees. Right in Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, there's some description of austerity of speech. And one of the items of austerity of speech is to speak some words of correction only if you have that relationship. If you don't have the relationship, then you don't. You may speak to someone else who does, so that they can speak in an appropriate way. But it's service, or service, or service, or service, or service, or service, or varieties of service. We serve the devotees. That should be our mood, the mood of service, in an appropriate manner. And therefore some training is required in order to help us understand what's appropriate. But always to serve. And Krishna likes that. Now when Krishna smiles, everything gets better. If Krishna's pleased, everything gets better. And that's what we want, that Krishna gets pleased. Not just that everything gets better, we want that Krishna's pleased. Anything? Yes? Yeah. There's a book by Narahari Sarkar called Krishna Bhajanamrita, written in Bengali, and it's been translated into English, and I'm not sure where you can get a copy. But it's a book on, specifically, it's etiquette with elevated souls who are etiquette with Guru and other elevated souls. Krishna Bhajanamrita. Narahari Sarkar. Very little skinny book. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.